Dour-faced villagers quietly shuffled down the lane that passed for Falborg's thoroughfare. Occasionally, one of the peasants would pause to stare at the wood-framed expanse of the village's tavern, when another cry of pain exploded from behind the building's walls. But even these curious minds found that their errands required haste, after all, when the door of the tavern opened and a grim figure in armor and helm emerged. Brunner strode from the tavern, wiping blood from his glove onto the scrap of cloth he held in his other hand. It had taken a bit of persuasion, but he had finally persuaded the recalcitrant brother of the notorious highwayman, Gobineau, to confess the whereabouts of the outlaw. Indeed, Brunner considered that it had been a fairly profitable morning. But the sound of booted feet at his back caused the bounty hunter to forget thoughts of profit and prey. With a single, fluid motion, he spun about, tossing the cloth from his bloodied hands. "If you have a name, you'd better use it," he ordered, his hand pulling his gunpowder pistol from its holster and pointing the weapon at a man who stood only a few feet away. Framed in the sunlight of the morning was a young man, wearing a shabby and worn-looking hauberk of toughened leather reinforced by steel studs. A round kettle hat perched atop the stranger's handsome features, a thin fringe of closely cropped black hair peering from beneath the rim of the heavy iron helmet. His face was set with a harsh scowl of cold determination, and his brown eyes were narrowed in a penetrating look of intense scrutiny. The man's smooth-skinned hand rested casually upon the steel pommel of the broadsword sheathed at his side. "I understand that I can find a bounty hunter called Brunner here," the young man said, adjusting his stance so that he might be able to draw the weapon easier. "I am Joseph Kretzer, son of Otto Kretzer of Imperial Schrabwald. If you are indeed a man I seek, I have come to hire you."
"Indeed," Brunner said, his voice dripping with doubt. "It is a very skillful or a very lucky man who can find me when I am already on the hunt." Menace overwhelmed the bounty hunter's voice. "Either way, it is a very foolish man who intrudes upon my business."
"I am here to retain your services, not to be threatened," Joseph snapped, arrogance seeping into the words, mingling with the rage that lurked just beneath his cool veneer. "I wish to hire you to lead me to the murdering bastard that killed my father."
"Does this man have a name?"
Brunner asked, keeping the pistol trained upon Joseph. Joseph paused, gathering his thoughts, recalling the frightened whispers of the peasants in Gambri. "It is my understanding that this animal is known as the Black Prince." A trace of amusement crawled upon the bounty hunter's face, and tugged at the corners of his mouth.
"You come all this way chasing a fable. There is no Black Prince. Better to ask me to bring you the head of Forgrim Grudgebearer, the Dwarf High King. At least he is real."
"I have seen him," Joseph roared. "I watched him kill my father with my own eyes. With my own hands I took this from him." Joseph reached to his belt and drew the thorn-shaped dagger from its scabbard, Brunner's gaze fixed upon the weapon. Brunner returned the pistol to its holster and stalked forward. He motioned for the boy to hand over the dagger. The bounty hunter stared intently at the weapon, turning it over, letting the light of the morning play across its dark metal surface.
"You took this from the Black Prince?" he asked.
"He was very substantial for a myth," the youth shot back. Brunner snorted a brief chuckle.
"If this really comes from who you say, then we should talk." The bounty hunter stared at the young merchant. "Meet me in the stables."
Brunner reached forward and tucked the dagger back in its scabbard on the boy's belt.
"And don't go showing that to anyone else."
"Then, will you help me?" Joseph asked, his voice still flat, betraying neither hope nor suspicion. The bounty hunter had to admit that the young merchant was very good at giving nothing away. He nodded his armored head.
That remains to be seen, but you do have my interest now," the bounty hunter replied. Brunner found Joseph Kretzer sitting upon a low wooden box beside a pile of yellowed hay in the shadows of the village stable. The building stank of dung and the sweat of animals, yet the bounty hunter could detect no sign of displeasure on the merchant's face. Perhaps he was a bit tougher than his soft-skinned hands indicated. Brunner strode past the youth, not pausing to greet him as he rose from his seat. He walked straight to the massive bay tethered by the rear wall of the wooden stable. The animal's reins loped around a simple ring of iron. The bounty hunter laid a soothing hand on his steed's neck, stroking away some of the horse's tension. "Have you considered my offer?" Joseph asked, following the bounty hunter as he stepped away from Fiend and made his way over to his sturdy gray pack horse, Paychest. Brunner removed a small carrot from one of the pouches on his belt, giving the treat to the overworked animal. He looked up, staring at the youth. "That dagger you stole." Brunner watched as a venomous quality fought its way through the boy's calm facade. The bounty hunter chuckled. "Let's say, claimed, then." It was as close to a word of apology he had given for 5 years. "Do you have any idea what it is?" Joseph drew the knife again, trying to discern what the bounty hunter gleaned from the weapon during his brief examination of it. "The balance is wrong. The space between hilt and pommel is unwieldy for a single-handed blade," Joseph observed. "Probably some foreigner's weapon, where they have curious ideas about warcraft and swordplay." Brunner nodded his head, reaching to the massive burden that was balanced upon the back of Paychest. He undid several straps, and the long length of leather fell open, displaying an elegant-looking bow and a number of steel arrows, their heads barbed. The bounty hunter undid the thongs that held the bow and lifted the weapon from its pack. The bow was slender, crafted in pale, almost white wood. Engravings scrawled across almost all of its length. It was quite possibly the most beautiful weapon Joseph had ever seen, more like a work of art than a tool of war. The bounty hunter tossed the weapon to the merchant. Joseph studied the bow, again astounded by the curious grip and the awkwardness the weapon was imbued with. A sudden realization made him look back at the bounty hunter. "It is like the dagger," the youth exclaimed. Brunner motioned for Joseph to return the weapon. "I took that from a hired killer in the Border Princes 1 year ago, the bounty hunter said, "but it was crafted for no human hand." Brunner let that knowledge sink in a moment as he returned the bow to its place and refastened the leather roll to his pack horse's burden. "Elves?" the boy gasped. He had seen elves a few times in his life, tall, graceful, and impossibly beautiful beings. There was a few who could be found in Altdorf, and a veritable community of the so-called sea elves in the city-state of Marienburg. Joseph thought again about the unwieldy grip of the dagger. Shaped for hands longer than those of a man, for fingers thinner and more delicate than the harsh paws of a mere human. Brunner nodded. "It is the only thing that makes any sense." The bounty hunter stepped away from Paychest, facing the young merchant. "How much do you know about this Black Prince?"
"Only what I have been told by the villagers in Gambri, and what the Viscount of Chegnay told me when I petitioned him for aid in hunting down my father's killer."
Joseph thought again about that humiliating encounter in the Viscount's castle. The Chegnay had been displeased to hear about the entire affair, but he had done no more than provide Joseph with a set of battered and discarded armor and a feeble horse that must have been selected as supper for the Viscount's kennel before he had given it to Joseph. Only one other thing had the Viscount given him,
a word of warning that he should forget about everything and return to the empire and enjoy his father's estate.
Brunner shook his head at the mention of the Viscount, but kept his thoughts to himself. Instead, he spoke in a low, icy voice.
"They have been telling stories about the Black Prince for hundreds of years," he said. "He is always described as an arrogant, tall, slender figure in dark armor, an expert swordsman able to best even the noblest of knights. He commands men and beasts. He is a bandit host that preys upon the land like a murderous plague."
The bounty hunter let a thin laugh rasp from his throat.
"You have heard, no doubt, of Britonia's Grail Knights, who search all across the kingdom in quest of the holy cup of the Lady of the Lake. The Black Prince is the bounty hunter's holy cup. 300 years ago, the old king of Britonia placed a price of 5,000 pieces of gold for the head of the Black Prince, after the death of an envoy from the forest realm of Loren. Yet in all that time, no one has claimed that reward. Most men of my calling consider him a myth, a boogeyman called upon by inept sheriffs and larcenous caravan masters to explain every theft this side of the Grey Mountains."
Brunner paused, staring at the boy again, a crafty look narrowing the icy eyes behind the visor of his helm.
"Tell me everything that happened that night, exactly as it happened."
Joseph began to relate the events of the night his father died. He told of the sinister traveler and his duel with the leader of the bandits. He told of the impossible speed with which both of them moved and the amazing swordcraft of the Black Prince. He told of the monster's cruel mockery of his overmatched foe, and of his equal savagery when he casually commanded his minions to burn down the tavern and its occupants. He specially detailed for Brunner the strange armor the Black Prince wore, that was at once hideous and beautiful. When he had finished, the bounty hunter moved toward Fiend, untying the animal from the iron ring.
"Will you help me, then?"
Joseph asked, as the bounty hunter led his animal from the stall. Brunner removed the rag from the pack on the side of his saddle and tossed it to the boy.
"With 5,000 gold crowns in the balance, I may not even charge you."
Brunner pointed a gloved finger at the dagger.
"Cover that up, and don't show it to anyone unless I tell you."
He smiled.
"We don't want anyone else getting any ideas about where that dagger came from."
The seated figure gazed towards the balcony, watching the morning sun turn the grey stonework white, as its rays banished the shadows. Such a glorious morning, not a cloud in the sky. Once again, the noble on the black throne felt melancholy spirits tugging at his normally steadfast heart. Once again, he thought of the perpetual darkness and gloom of his home, the icy northern gales that howled through the towers and battlements of his city like a legion of screaming banshees. They bore them with the soft white snow of the north, which glittered with the chromatic taint of the Chaos Waste's magic, captured by the clouds, and borne to the south by the power of Nagaroth's sorcerers. Dralaif sighed and adjusted the sleeve of his long silk kaitan, as he remembered his lost homeland. He would return some day, not as a corpse or as a prisoner. He would return as a conqueror. Even the dark gods would not deny him this, for were they not the cause of his exile? Were they not the reason he had become the Black Prince? He cast his eye upon the locked box of blackened teak wood that rested upon a cushion beside his throne. It was an heirloom of his family, captured by some long-dead ancestor during a raid on Cathay. Within the box, however, was an artifact of far more recent vintage, captured by Dralaif himself, and torn from the neck of a Norse seer when Dralaif's ship had met the barbarian's dragon boat. Dralaif thought back to that day when he had led the corsairs down onto the deck of their captured prize. The Norse were rugged and powerful for humans,
and far more manageable than orcs in the mines and slave pits. The Dark Elves fought a bitter battle, hindered by a reluctance to kill too many of the barbarians, lest their slave-taking be reduced to unprofitable levels. In fact, the Corsairs had been almost bested by the Norse. Then withering blasts of eerie blue light had come, and the flame that struck down dozens of Corsairs left their armor steaming, but their skin unmarred. Dralaeth had fought his way to the prow of the ship as his Corsairs perished all around him. There he had found the cause of the sorceress' assault, a huge human dressed in a mangy black robe of dyed leather, the leering skull of some fanged and horned beast over his head like a helmet. The seer had been a massive, powerful man once, but now he was like a withered giant. Weak of arm or not, as the seer turned about, his clawed hand opened to reveal the gleaming jewel it held. Dralaeth knew that he was dead then. Yet it was not the Dark Elf's eyes that showed fear, but those of the seer. He snarled a brutal oath, but the jewel in his hand did not obey. Sheets of mystical fire did not consume Dralaeth's body. The Dark Elf had not waited for the seer to recover, but had darted in at once and removed the Norseman's hand. A pair of Corsairs lunged forward to secure the maimed mystic, while Dralaeth recovered the jewel from the pools of blood that swamped the deck. He had learned later, after his torturers had administered their art upon the seer, that the jewel was called the Eye of Char. The eye acted as a focus for mighty powers, powers that could instill vitality and strength in a man, powers that could summon demons from the nether realms to rend the flesh of the wielder's foes. But this was not the greatest of its powers. He had learned that it showed its owner the future, that the depths of the gem would reveal any danger that threatened, and that it would show the owner of the jewel how that danger might be undone. But there had been one question that had troubled Dralaeth. Why had the Eye of Char not warned the seer about him? The seer had laughed then, laughed until the torturers had broken him beyond the point of return. Only as life seeped from his mutilated body did the Norse stop laughing. He smiled up at the Dark Noble. He commended Dralaeth on his wisdom, but he could give him no answer, for the seer had never thought to ask that question when he had taken it from a marauding chieftain long ago before he was a sorcerer. The Black Prince gazed back to the long table set before his throne. A nervous human was seated there, his garments reeking of filth, his hair greasy with dirt and grime. The Dark Elf tried to recall the man's name, but could not. He could not even remember why he had been imprisoned in his dungeons. He dismissed his concerns. Whatever he had done, it was unimportant. The Black Prince snapped his fingers. Four servants shambled into the chamber. The first carried a crystal bottle, something that had been salvaged from the cellars of the tower when the Black Prince had reclaimed it from the goblin vermin who had lived there for centuries. The Dark Elf smiled as he saw the dark crimson liquid within the bottle. The second servant bore a large goblet, its surface covered in silver. The cup of the goblet was crafted from the skull of the latest assassin that sought his life. The last two servants labored under a heavy tray upon which a pile of meat steamed. The Black Prince inhaled, savoring the odor. Then he snapped his fingers, and all three objects were set before the prisoner. "You are hungry," the Black Prince declared. "See what a feast I have prepared for you." The man looked upon the Dark Elf, then cast his eyes again at the steaming roasted meat before him. "Eat," the Dark Elf commanded, as the man hesitated. One of the servants began to pour the thick red liquid from the bottle into the skull goblet, careful not to spill a single drop. Trembling with loathing and terror, the prisoner clutched at the goblet and fought down his disgust as he let the salty fluid pass his lips. As he did so, the seated lord began to murmur almost inaudibly, the melodious sounds drifting across the room with a life of their own. The almond-shaped eyes of the Black Prince began to glow with a mystical light, and he let out a satisfied hiss.
"Exquisite," he declared. "Now, try some of the meat."
The prisoner moaned, but reached forward and tore a small morsel from the tray. The Black Prince smacked his lips as the diner reluctantly ate. It had been hundreds of years since Dralaif had savored food with his own mouth. The venoms with which the nobility of Nagaroth coated their bodies invariably killed the senses of taste and touch. Only by sorcery, or by forcing his mind to bond with that of another, could the Black Prince experience the taste of food and wine. It was not something that he could do often, for there was always a toll exacted for such frivolous uses of magic. But sometimes there arose occasions when he would indulge himself. The Black Prince considered what the Eye of Char had shown him upon his return to the stronghold. One of the bandits, a weaselly little Bretonian named Ferrex, a close confederate to the traitor Bors, had not returned with him. The Eye of Char had revealed a thief hastening back to his home village. He was filled with terror that Bors would implicate him in their crude little plot. But what the Eye had shown him afterwards, the way the Black Prince might steer events, that had been truly enlightening. The Dark Elf smiled, not even noticing that the diner had stopped eating and was trying his best not to vomit up what little he had consumed. It was such a simple plot, and the Black Prince was astounded that it had never occurred to him before. And the Eye of Char had not shown him such a scheme before this. Not for the first time, the Dark Elf wondered if he was in control of the jewel, or if it was in control of him. The Black Prince dismissed such concerns as soon as they took shape. It was a talisman, nothing more. And there was nothing he needed to fear with it guiding him. Certainly, there was nothing he had to fear from some coarse human bounty killer. The Black Prince pointed a slender finger at the diner, then pointed again at the steaming ribcage on the tray.
"More meat,"
his melodious voice commanded. The Black Prince settled back in his throne, adjusting his body on the fur coverings. He would enjoy to the fullest measure this meal. It was not every day that he had meat from Nagaroth to savor.